honesty, integrity, and experience that is often lacking in the precious metals business. Let her put it to work for you. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
Years ahead of the dominant media, find out first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, on satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty.
Listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Tuesday. It is the 5th of July in the year 2005. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. My goodness, 1 month. The months seem like weeks, don't they, folks? I guess when you're busy and you're keeping busy, the time does fly. And when you're having a good time, the time does fly. Our spiritual message tonight is another from the Course in Miracles, from the text, page 76. I did this a few weeks ago. I place the peace of God in your heart and in your hands to hold and share. The heart is pure to hold it, and the hands are strong to give it. We cannot lose. I think about that. I think about this plan, that this system that we were born into, and that it appears that I don't know when, but there had to have been a time, or maybe certain times, when people did live naturally, without the mind manipulation, without the manipulation of whole groups of people because of the money. And Alan Watt, I was reading to you from his book, his third one, Cutting Through, last night, and he certainly, in this book, leaves no question in your mind that this plan, the same plan, has been being promulgated down throughout the ages. And I'm going to do some more of this tonight, and what I want to do is repeat a little bit of that final page. It was about the Habaru, and I'm thinking possibly tomorrow night maybe Alan would grace us with his presence, and that we could talk about this, because it certainly leaves some curious questions in my mind. The Habaru being it appears from the history that Alan is quoting in here, they were the money lenders, they were the merchants, they were the caravaniers, the traders, and today they're known as Jews. They were then referred to as Habaru or Haparu. I could be pronouncing that wrong. I'm doing it phonetically. Maybe it's Hapiru and Habiru, but whatever. It's spelled H-A-B-I-R-U, H-A-P-I-R-U, and A-P-I-R-U. They were known as the Dusty Ones, because they traveled. And I'm going to pick this up. Well, actually, as I said, I'm going to repeat some of that final page. He's referring here to a writer, the Amarna Letters from Palestine, Cambridge Ancient History. Professor W.F. Albright writes, quote, listen, there was a large and apparently increasing class of stateless and reputedly lawless. Stateless and lawless people in Palestine and Syria, to whom the name Apiru or Habiru was given. It has now become certain that they were a class of heterogeneous, in other words, mixed races, ethnic origin, and that they spoke different languages, often alien to the people in whose documents they appear. And that's end quoting. And Alan's comments here, and have your pen handy. If you haven't taken his address down, I'll give it to you again tonight if you'd like to order this book. He says Amarna was an Egyptian capital city and received records from all over their vast empire. The Apiru appeared concerned in the carrying trade between cities, were to be found within every city, and yet belonged to none. And what does that describe? What group that is that described today, folks? They are a nation amongst nations. No matter where they are a nation unto themselves, and they belong to no nation other than their own, which is not, it is not, we could say, Israel? No, it is not. Israel is not their nation. They are a nation of stateless and lawless people, and I am not painting them all with the same brush, because it's only if the shoe fits that an individual would wear it. They had a supranational god at the head of their secret power, a god contemptuous of all other gods and peoples. This god would become in all, overall, invisible yet all-pervading. The god of such a secretive confederacy, with his control over international movements of silver bullion, would naturally be a very jealous deity, with hatred towards other state gods. For when money values were based on the exchange value of his silver in such international exchanges, then he and his acolytes, whoever they were, knew that all prosperity in the kingdoms of those ancient times depended on him, and whether he ordained through his servants that silver would be plentiful or otherwise, whether there would be no money and hardship. He was fanatically jealous of this power. Competition was sin. Well, what do they do today? What do they do today to create a recession or a depression? They just pull in the money, folks. And they wrote about that, remember this? Wrote about that in the story of Joseph in Egypt. How after the 7 years of good harvest and then the famine came and the people came to Joseph, they all brought their grain to store up in the Pharaoh's silos in preparation for the bad times that Joseph had said according to the interpretation of the Pharaoh's dream. And that's what got him. It's a story, but that's according to the story, it's what got him to be the vizier there in Egypt. And so then when the bad times came and there was no grain, they went to Joseph and they said, we need some grain, we're hungry. And guess what? The people that grew it and stored it, brought it for storage, had to pay for the grain that they grew. And then it says right there in that story, you can look it up yourself, it says that Joseph took all the money and brought it unto the Pharaoh. So he created a depression. And the next year, the people were still starving. They were hungry. And they came to Joseph and they said, we're hungry, but the money fails. There is no money. And he said, okay, fine. Give me your flocks. Give me your herds. So they did that, and the next year, still no money, and they had nothing else to give but their land and they themselves and their children into bondage, into slavery. And then it says there that Joseph gathered up all the people from the country and brought them into the cities. Now, if that isn't happening today, Now, that isn't God's plan, folks. Be real clear. That's the plan. That we're the system that we are struggling under today, and they just told it to us right there in their holy book. In their holy book. And they're the ones, you know, I get a lot of times, I get email on the internet that says we need to go back to the gold standard. Well, they control the gold. And so what good is that going to do? Going to a gold standard. So I'll get on with this. In Professor Albright's work, mentioned at the top of this page, he points out the distinct differences between the Bedouin and the Sagaz troops. Sa, it's capital S-A, point, G-A-Z. And in parentheses, that's an old Hittite term for the Apiru. So, Professor Albright points out the distinct differences between the Bedouin and the Apiru around the time of 1500 B.C. He further points out that Apiru meant dusty ones in northwestern Semitic and in Syriac, referring to the common characteristic fact that the bearers of this name trudges in the dust behind donkeys, mules, chariots, and wagons of goods. The professor did further investigation of the caravan trade of the 20th to the 19th centuries B.C. and claims he found strong correlation between early patriarchal tradition of the Apiru when compared with descriptions in Genesis. The mystery of the Apiru or Habiru recurs by their name appearing in cuneiform texts from all over Mesopotamia, Syria, Egypt, and Asia Minor, all of which date from between the dynasty of Agade, A-G-A-D-E, and the 11th century B.C. The Apiru of later times were also known to include sections of bandits, smugglers, and mercenaries, especially during the upheaval caused by the collapse of the main cities of Babylonia, suffering from spaced invasions by Gutim, Hittites, and Elamites. In the Tel Amarna tablets in Volume 2, Samuel A.B. Mercer refers to the use of the name Habiru at Babylon in the time of Hammurabi. He further states that a list of gods called List of the Gods of the Habiru was found at Bog Haz Khoi by the archaeologist Winkler. The secret societies of a group known as the Habura seem to have existed long before the destruction of Jerusalem by Titus. According to Jost, History of the Jews, Volume 1, Vespasian appointed Rabbi John ben Zakkai, chief of the Habura, as ruler of Jamnia. By the time of Hammurabi of Babylon, just a minute, I'm trying to get this book set so that I can... Okay. By the time of Hammurabi of Babylon, private issue of silver was well established and corruption was rampant. No doubt, he introduced the even older codes of law concerning lawful weights and measures as a political gesture to appease, quote, the people. He did, however, invade the city of Ur. It seems to be a temporary headquarters. It's seeming to be a temporary headquarters for the otherwise nomadic commerce-promoting people. Sir Charles Woolley, who discovered the tombs of the Third Dynasty at Ur, states, quote, when we dug away the filling, we found that in the upper part of the blocking of the door of each of the tomb chambers, there had been made a small breach, just large enough for a man to get through. The dislodged bricks were lying in front of the door, covered by the clean earth imported for the filling. The tomb had been robbed, and obviously, just as the earth was about to be put in, nobody would have dared to rob them when the pit was still in use, nor if such sacrilege had been done, would the bricks have been left scattered on the floor and the breach unfilled. The robbers must have chosen their moment when the inviolable earth would at once hide all traces of their crime, and they could afford to be careless. And that was quoting Sir Charles Woolley, Excavation at Ur. And Alan says, that's end quoting Sir Charles Woolley, he says, it is clear there had to be connivance of certain persons in high places to whom this devotion meant nothing and had no meaning. Also, to risk being caught with gold and silver robbed from a freshly filled tomb required training, trained expertise in fast removal and smelting down of the items, men who had the means to get the treasure out of the country fast, requiring an international organization sworn to secrecy. Interestingly, very few Egyptian tombs have been found unlooted. Around 1200 BC, a major conference was held by Egyptian nobility to attempt to find how the thieves could be so successful in raiding scores of royal and noble tombs. It became so bad that in order to stop the mummies being stripped for the small jewelry wrapped within the cloth, dozens of them were removed and piled up inside guarded tombs. The main treasures were, of course, gone, once again reduced to the smelter and smuggled out of the country. Professor Paul Einzig in Primitive Money, Oxford, states, quote, the gold lavishly decorating the Hebrew temple for decorative purposes existed also as a monetary reserve. When Hezekiah had paid a tribute of 300 talents of silver and 30 talents of gold to the king of Assyria around 700 BC, he, quote, cut the gold from the doors of the temple of the Lord and from the pillars. And that's in 11 Kings 18 and 16. Using the temple for such purposes was the norm across the ancient world, including the Greek states, the latter lavishing precious metals, decorating their temples to favorite female deities. The temple of Artemis at Ephesus, temple of Aphrodite at Corinth, the temple of Athena at Athens, all owed their origin to the ancient mother goddess, who, through the wondrous urge in her body, consumed the life force of man. The controllers of the healthy continuance in these cities were a priesthood, who considered themselves direct representatives of the goddess on earth. There's always a priesthood behind it, isn't there, folks? Even the old kingdom of Egypt, and from the earliest years of Babylonia, two yearly numberings of all people and professions were taken, well-detailed records being kept by city priests. A refined system of distribution of surpluses and creation of exchanges must therefore have existed. Even the old kingdom of Egypt, and from the earliest years of Babylonia, two yearly numberings, that's like the census, folks, of all people and possessions were taken, and well-detailed records being kept by city priests. The agents of money power, even prior to the existence of coined money, had, by expanding commerce, been introduced into the world their own system of weights and measures, in effect creating an ancient international standard. They promoted the temples everywhere as being of prime importance as a form of government the merchant bankers understood best. They promoted the temples everywhere as being of prime importance as a form of government the merchant bankers understood best. To enslave free people, it is necessary to create a form of centralized government, which by taking over everything, forcing belief of whatever suits their purpose, excuse me, I jumped a line here. This has no paragraphs and it's a little bit difficult to follow. Let me start that over. To enslave free people, it is necessary to create a form of centralized government which, by taking over everything, by taking over individual free will decision-making, begins to standardize everything, forcing belief of whatever suits their purpose upon all individuals, directing social and cultural norms into a new single purpose, often without conscious cognition of the new mass man. The temple priests were easy to subvert and control. The money agents no different in technique today, as they head directly to the seat of power. Governments today have become little more than a front, giving legality to such money as circulates, bearing as it does the profile of the ruler or past, quote, hero, who so unwittingly or knowingly has been the co-conspirator of that money power, always totally international in character, with its own secret religion, history, and plans for everyone's future. This secret fraternity often conducted their business in the shade of the temple courtyards in order to be accepted by the worshippers as part of tradition, this giving sanctity to their dealings, which so often were against the best well-being of the people who sheltered them. Called Trapezita, this is Trapezitae, called Trapezite. I'm just going to refer to it as Trapezite, called Trapezite in Greek countries because of their sitting at counting tables in the courtyards of temples. These men used the temples as local branch banks. In Babylonia, the class of money lenders of the same period were called collectively Tamkaru, and singularly as Tamkaram. Men with such titles were to have been higher up in the ranks of the Apiru, settling for periods of time in cities of high prosperity, observing the culture and customs of the native population. There are records found that this class, who financed other traders, was heavily involved in the slave trade, always needing new slaves to replace those killed in their mines. Tamkaru eventually bribed their way into a semi-official position with rulers, where he was successful in having kings like Hammurabi put into law the right of Tamkaru to collect a minimum of 100% profit on loans. Tamkaru were fond of a particular saying, quote, the giving of a loan is like making love. The return on a loan is like having a son born. 100% interest, folks. We hear the word Phoenician often in history, yet the name was given by the Greeks to people of Syria and Canaan who were the sea merchant class of the Epiru. On board was always a Tamkaram with his silver and trinkets, which he would exchange for real goods. Warfare was extremely lucrative and beneficial to the money lender. With his traveling caravans, kings would hear updates of the goings-on in other parts, listen to this closely. With his traveling caravans, kings would hear updates of the goings-on in other parts of the world. It was no difficult thing to dispense rumors throughout a city concerning neighbors who appeared to be arming for possible conquest. Loans were then sought in order to arm and equip a defensive force. The large bankers, of course, owning the mines where metal ore was taken, owning the weapons manufacturing plants, the horse trade, and so on. So, wars and rumors of wars. And they'd go into a town, and they'd set the rumors started, and then they'd loan money so that the people, the government there, would be able to build an army and get arms and weapons to defend themselves, or, quote, attack first. And maybe the particular city that was the topic or the subject of the rumor had no idea what the heck was going on. And folks, is it really any different today? Think about that. Look at their doing to Iraq, but look how they sucked the people of America, so many people, into this Iraq war because, oh, Saddam Hussein is a monster. He's a mean dictator. He treats his people terrible. And besides that, he was harboring Osama bin Laden. And besides that, he has weapons of mass destruction someplace. And he won't tell us where they are. And, of course, all of it was lies. But the media pressed it and pushed it and pushed it and pushed it. And there are people today, many people, who still believe those lies. And since when is the U.S. of A., well, it's been going on a long time, hasn't it, that it is our right to go and depose a leader? And obviously, Saddam Hussein was not the monster that he was made out to be. And there is a book on our website at sweetliberty.org written by Nita Renfrew on Saddam Hussein, and it gives you a history of actually going back quite a ways in the political intrigues that were going on there. And when they had their so-called elections over there after this last genocidal venture into Iraq, I have a newspaper article here that the Communist Party is a very heavy majority in the, quote, new government. And who controls the U.S. government today? And our lives because of it. I guess we could call him Habiru. They call themselves Jews. We're about ready to take a break here. And after that, I'm going to give you Ellen's address. And there's just a couple more pages here. Well, there's a few. But if you would like to call in tonight, you're welcome to do so. The call-in number, if you want to write it down, if you don't have it, is 570-537-3025. And we'll take this break. Please have your pen in your hand so that you can get my address if you would like to help keep the broadcast Sweet Liberty on the air. You know what? We've been 7 full years since 1998, June, of listener-sponsored broadcasting. Actually, we're going into our 8th year. That's somewhat of a miracle. And it's up to you, folks. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25. Or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. Don't do internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
All right, we're back with you. If you still have your pen in your hand, the book I have been reading from is number 3 of Alan Watts. This one is titled Cutting Through. And his address, if you want to order the book, it's $25. He's written... We'll take this phone call. And then I'll give you the address. Hello, you're on the air.
Jackie?
Yeah.
Hi. I have a question.
Okay, I don't know if I can answer it, but you can ask it.
I know. I called because I listen to shortwave quite frequently.
Who's calling?
This is Arlene. I'm in Forest City. We've called you before. My husband called you.
Yeah, I knew your voice was familiar, Arlene.
Yeah, and Joe has helped you out with the electronics up there.
Yes.
You might remember now.
Yes, I do, honey.
Okay. I was calling. Was listening to another shortwave station today, and it was they had a question and answer period for, it was a Catholic question and answer period.
Uh huh.
And I just, figured I'd just call up and ask the question. And my question was, all the religious, the religion is being taken out of the schools, out of public buildings, and the Ten Commandments are being taken out of, federal buildings, there's no prayer in school.
Well, Arlene, that the Ten Commandments are in the courthouses, honey.
There's one courthouse in down south where the Ten Commandments were taken.
Yeah, I know, Judge Roy Moore's.
Uh huh.
But U.S. Supreme Court, the Ten Commandments are there, I guess.
Yeah, but further expanding on this, as I said, the parents being taken out of school, and all that. Why is it? They say separation of church and state.
Uh-huh.
Why is there, when you go to churches, we've been in a lot of Catholic churches and Protestant churches, and every church has an American flag in it. Why is that, if there is supposed to be separation of church and state?
Oh, that's real interesting, Arlene. Did you get an answer?
The answer I got was, that, like, even, and I says, you know, is there a place in the Bible where it states, if, you know, the federal government has to be, you know, and you have to have a flag in the church? And he had stated that, he said that, I guess, a scripture in Romans.
Now, Paul?
Or, you know, yeah.
Obey your government?
Right.
Yeah.
Saying that you have to be subservient.
Yep, subservient to your government. And that's what, that was their answer?
Yes.
Oh, my.
Basically.
When you think about it.
You know, and he expanded on it a little further, but that was basically the gist of it.
Yep.
To me, that didn't seem, you know, like I'd like to, you know, delve into this a little further, because it just still didn't satisfy my...
Yeah, well, the Mormons also tell their flock the same thing. Because I had a Mormon one time send me, I didn't ask for it, but they sent it, and I listened to it, you know, out of respect for them sending it,
mm-hmm.
and curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of the high Mormon church leaders,
mm-hmm.
and he said the same thing, not about the flag, but about that you have to obey your government to be a good citizen,
mm-hmm.
and to be...
What he had stated to be patriotic.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and think about this. That isn't an American flag. It is the flag of the U.S. government, Inc., and it's a flag of war. Because every time they win a battle, they plant that flag, don't they, Arlene?
Yes, they do.
Yes, they do. I don't fly that flag anymore, honey. I used to have a great... my neighbor across the road put my flagpole back up for me. That's where I had it before. I had sold that property across the road. And I said, I'm not putting a flag up, but I do have one here. It's a UN flag.
Mm-hmm.
And Chuck had taken it to a T-shirt shop and had him put a big round red with a slash through it.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him, I said, if you'll let me fly that one, that's the one we'll put up. So, here's something. I just want to say this about the Ten Commandments. It's a thought that I have, and it was from the book, you know, that I've been writing, Jewish Persecution.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you get into the Noahide laws, what they say, and let's face it, they are in control of probably every government today, but what they say is this, that the Ten Commandments only are for the Jews. Arlene, now you keep this in mind. See, I kept trying to figure out why in the heck are they taking the Ten Commandments down? That's part of the Old Testament and their story of Moses going up and, you know, getting them printed on the rocks and stuff. Why would they be taking them down? Well, when you find out that their plan with the Noahide laws is that all non-Jews will be under the seven Noahide laws. And they with the, here's their discourse on it. And there's two different thoughts. I guess you could go with either one. They said that the Noahide laws were given by God to Adam and Noah at the beginning. Now this is nowhere in the Bible anywhere, not New or Old Testament. It's right out of the Talmud.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the Noahide laws were given to Adam and Noah at the dawn of civilization, and all mankind were under the seven Noahide laws. Well, then, when Moses came down to the special chosen people with the Ten Commandments, the Gentiles weren't there. So the Gentiles are still under the Noahide laws, and only the Jews are under the Ten Commandments. And that makes sense to me. And it makes sense to me why there are certain of the federal buildings or courthouses that they leave them up. Because the Ten Commandments, according to them, are only for the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense?
So maybe some of those that they're still up are more in control of the...
Well, I don't know if you were listening. Mm-hmm. It might have been last week. I got this article emailed to me, and it came off a Jewish website,
mm-hmm.
and they were talking about the Sanhedrin that they were going to reinstitute, or they have reinstituted the Sanhedrin. You know what that is, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, and Alan says, and I would agree with this without really having any proof, but I don't think Sanhedrin ever wasn't, was ever dismantled or anything. But one of the things that they said in this article, they said that they were talking about some of the issues that the Sanhedrin would be addressing, and they are going to be establishing the courts under the Noahide laws. One of the laws commands that they establish courts to try people in, you know, who break one of the Noahide laws, and that they have already established one of these courts in Israel, and the next one is going to come to the U.S.
Are those courts similar to some of the, you know, when they say you can be tried by, you know, under like with the UN, they can, you know, try you under UN?
No.
That's totally separate.
Yeah, but these are Jews, honey. This is the blatant revelation, if you would, of their ultimate plan. Because in their Noahide websites, they say that all Gentiles will become, they call them Hasidic Gentiles, and that we will do, as far as the education for Hasidic Gentiles, we won't get the same education that the Jews do. We will get reading, because basically we will be intensively studying the Torah. Now, one of the first of the Noahide laws, or one of them in there, is thou shalt not blaspheme. It isn't commit adultery, but I think it's blaspheme or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who refers to themselves as a Christian is a blasphemer. And this is true. I found it in their websites. There are 7 Noahide laws, but what they've done, like they do with everything, they created 60-some sub-laws underneath the Noahide laws.
Right.
There's only one punishment for breaking one of the Noahide laws. The punishment is death, and the mode of death is by decapitation, Arlene. Now, they mean this.
Wow.
They mean this. And so that flag that's in those schools, it maybe shows the ownership of the U.S. Government, Inc., over the children that are in those schools.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's their little fun and games. And people, you noticed it, and I think it was a wonderful question you asked, and I understand that the answer you got didn't satisfy you, but that's the answer they give. They go to, quote, St. Paul. Now, Paul was a Pharisee, and he has been, of course, sainted by the church, because he got nuked on the road to Damascus and got religion. We don't know that. History points to evidence that not only was he a member of the Pharisee, but that he actually was a member of the Sanhedrin. Because in the part in the Bible where they're stoning Stephen. And the law was that whoever initiated the stoning had to throw his cape in at the feet of a member of the Sanhedrin. And this guy threw his cape at Paul's feet. So it appears that Paul was chosen to Judaize Christianity. And then, of course, the church saints him. And if you notice, you'll notice that Christians quote the Old Testament and Paul more than there ever you hear them quoting Jesus. Isn't that so?
Yeah, it is.
But you know what? I'm going to see if Alan will come on with us tomorrow night,
mm-hmm.
and maybe he'll have some commentary on this, Arlene.
Okay.
Okay?
I'd appreciate it.
It's good to hear from you, honey.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thanks. Folks, if you'd like to call in, you're welcome to. What I was going to do here, but we can stop any time, because you can buy this book. Oh, I do want to give you Alan's address. Whoops. All right. Let me give you Alan's address right now. before we forget this. It's Alan. Hi. Hello. You're on the air. All right, Alan. Hello.
Yeah, hello?
Yes.
Yeah, it's Storm from New York.
Hi, Storm.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, it's interesting what you were discussing tonight.
This is out of Alan's book, honey.
What?
It is out of Alan Watts' book.
Right, okay. I'm listening here. You must have a long delay because you didn't give the address yet. Give the address or you...
No, I haven't given it yet.
Okay. All right.
Storm.
Yes?
Are you getting okay reception tonight?
I am. You sound a little clearer, except I did hear the Swedish news come through.
The Swedish news. I can give the address right now if you want while you're on the line.
Yeah, I may
want
to write them anyway for other reasons.
Okay, well...
And I know it's Watts, W-A-T-T-S.
Alan, A-L-A-N, W-A-T-T.
Yes.
And the address is Site, S-I-T-E, 41.
S-I-T-E.
Yeah, Site, that's S as in Samuel.
41.
Yeah, Box 4.
Oh, Box 4.
Uh-huh. And then and the next line is a stair. And that's like Fred Astaire with an E on it. E-S-T-A-I-R-E.
E-A-I-R-E.
Astaire, Ontario.
O-N-E-A-R-I-O. A-R-I-O.
All right, and the postal code
right.
is P, as in Peter.
P.
P with the, and then a 3.
3.
A E, as in Elizabeth.
Okay.
And then a 4.
Okay.
N as in Nora.
Yeah, okay.
And then a 1.
And then a 1.
So it's P3E4N1, and then you put Canada under that.
Okay, no, I know the Canadian postal system because it's similar to the ones in
That's
Europe.
Great. Well, you have to be sure that your full name, first and last name,
uh-huh.
and return address is there, or they won't deliver your mail anymore.
Why? What's the problem? That's not a problem, but I'm saying why. What is it?
Well, it's just the new rulings. I was told this by the post office when I went to mail something to Alan.
Uh-huh.
And I put Aunt Meg on the...
Okay, I got Alan Watts, site, S-I-T-E, okay, S-I-T-E 41, that's the number. Then underneath that, Box 4.
Yeah, or next to it.
S there, E-S-T-A-I-R-E, comma, Ontario, Ontario, Canada, O-N-T-A-I-O,
yes.
comma. Then P3E4N1,
yes.
comma, Canada.
Yeah, or Canada underneath.
Okay, right, underneath. Right, I got you.
Okay.
Use first and last name.
And if you're going to order the book, it has to be either cash or an international
postal money. Right,
yeah.
I see what you mean.
Not a U.S. postal money. You can get it right at your post office, though.
Right. The international money order is having to check it.
Okay.
Right. I see. All right. I just want to get that. That's not the only reason why I called, but I wanted to get that. Now, the other thing is this. this stuff with the Ten Commandments in this country with that, I mean, it's okay if you're, you know, a Christian or not. That doesn't, you know, bother me. But I'm really kind of tired of this country with... all this stuff, anyway, that these old bats who are running, you know, stuff. When I mean bats, I mean...
I can't. Wait a minute.
You're the people in power. What?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll hold.
No, you're just talking too fast, and I'm not...
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, now slow
what
down.
What I mean is that I'm kind of tired. I discussed this with a friend. You know, I don't care whether somebody's, you know, Christian or not. Some people aren't, whatever. But I'm kind of tired of this country, meaning the United States, with all this stuff. Anyway, with Ten Commandments and abortion and, you know, I know why the people in Hollywood feel the way they do. I'm not talking about the producers. I'm not talking about Steven Spielberg. I'm not talking about people on top. I'm talking about the celebrities, non-Jewish, who are successful, too. I know why some of them feel the way they do, like Tom Cruise. I know he's not what he's talking about with the mental stuff. I'm not going to get into it. But it seems to me that we're the only country in the Western world, and when I mean Western world, I'm talking about the United States, Canada, and Northern and Central Europe and Southern Europe, that has all this stuff around the Ten Commandments and abortion and morals and sex and this and that. And meanwhile, I read papers from, you know, some places I used to, even years ago, some stuff out of Germany that had discovered stuff with this. And I know they're dumbing them down now, but academically, 15 years ago, they were not. and it seems to be everything the debate politically in this country centers around, even when people are running for office, is all, especially with the South, and that's why I'm not so wild about the South, is all the stuff with the Bible and abortion and Ten Commandments. I don't think the Ten Commandments belong on any court base. I can see put under God there, that's fine, but I don't think they should have any of that anywhere. I don't think you have judges ruling on that. This is not a spiritual country. This
we're under Storm.
Okay, go ahead.
We are under Talmudic law today, and it makes all the sense in the world to me that they would leave the Ten Commandments in a Talmudic court.
Well, as I may ask you, because you're an expert on this.
No, I'm not.
Right? Because you study as many years longer than I have.
I'm not an expert.
Well, almost, semi-expert. Well, I know you got enough stuff there on the website and everything else to be close to one.
Okay.
I don't know what is. But anyway, I mean, Ewan Cooper and Jordan Max, I don't know what is or close to it. I mean, who else could be? But what I'm saying is that the Talmud, and I understand it's two Talmuds, the Babylon one and the Cooper said is another one, but the one that most commonly with the Jews, associated with the Jews, I don't think they even like Christians. So what I want to understand is that why would they want that if you're saying under Talmudic law? I don't think it should be under any religious law, period. But why would they want the Ten Commandments there? That's what I'm asking, because you know about this more than I do.
Well, I, you mean why would people want it there?
No, you're saying that we're under Talmudic law and that's why they want the Ten Commandments.
Well, because according to them, the Ten Commandments are only for the Jews. They aren't for Christians. The Ten Commandments come out of the Old Testament.
Which was Jewish, that's true.
Well, yes.
But Christianity, there really is no such religion as Christianity.
Well, right? they call it Christianity and they made it up.
No, that's right, but there really is no such thing. There was a guy even on Nori talking, I think it was George Nori or Art Bell. I know sometimes he has bull crap, okay? So like I said, it's only when I know
he mostly know has, he mostly has bull crap
there too, but sometimes you do have stuff that is real. He was talking, it was a guy in Belgium, his name was Lash, L-A-S-H. I'm not sure what the first name is.
Storm.
Well, what it was, he was discovering some of the ancient pagan civilizations in Europe. You know, he was in Belgium going to the library today. He was talking about this. And he was saying that some of the religious stuff that they had there, it had to deal with the stars and the moon and the forces of nature and the earth and so forth, predate Christianity, similar to
right
here in the Native American. And then I was thinking that, you know, Christianity, all the Christian holidays, including St. John's Day, which is really the old summer solstice, they don't even have any holidays. Now, Jesus Christ may have existed. Maybe he did, maybe not. I think he was just a mortal on a mission. He may have help from God. He may have help from angels. As far as I know, some people say that he was also wealthy, too, and he practiced magic. Angels.
Storm.
He'll call down these angels or God of the light side.
Storm.
Help him.
Storm.
Yeah, go ahead.
We have about 7 minutes left. Okay. And maybe,
but I'm just saying this country. I'm sick of stuff in this country. Around
well,
the
we're yes, I understand that.
I'd rather have something that's more scientific,
yeah,
logic.
Well, think about this though.
Like some parts of Europe.
Wait a minute. Just stop a minute.
Okay.
They're the ones who the priesthood.
Yes.
Way long time ago are the ones that created nations in the first place, because without a country border, you don't have to have an army to defend it. You don't have a government. The whole thing was created by them to do exactly what's being done today. So whether you like it or not, or you don't think we should, we all agree with you. What I'm telling you is it's part of the plan. And the plan goes back.
And you know a lot about this.
It goes back thousands and thousands and thousands of years.
You're telling me that the Norse kings too, and the Vikings, that they were into this also, because they weren't even Christian or Semitic. They didn't have any contact with Jews. Also, people in ancient Ireland before they were converted to Christianity.
But maybe it wasn't.
It transcends all religion, which it does.
Yeah.
It infiltrated all that Luciferian ideology with the.
Okay, we're going to say goodnight now.
Okay.
Thanks, Storm.
Right.
Bye-bye.
But these Jews that you're talking about, they're not as powerful as far as they're powerful, but they're not, they don't scare me.
Well, they don't scare me either, but
I'll kick their ass.
They're the ones.
I mean, you got stuff more on the historical and research.
Right.
Take, But I'm thinking of things like what I was telling the guy, what's his name, McCormick.
Okay, good night.
I have to call through the telephone company anymore. I'm going to screw them financially because those people are shit.
There you go. Good night. Good night, Storm.
Okay, take care.
You too. Folks, we've got a couple minutes left here. If anybody would like to call in, you're welcome to. What I'll do here, unless we get a call, is I'm going to skip over. Alan went into a couple of pages about Sparta and how Sparta functioned, you know, without this money system, the international money system. And I was going to skip that. And he said the reason for dwelling on Sparta is because it is perhaps one of the most clear examples of how countries fall one by one to tried and proven methods of subversion by a determined group of men of, quote, secrecy, a special brotherhood with a cunning and totally ruthless something at the top, something with almost incredible intellect and knowledge of human behavior, something which plans the future many centuries in advance, that which it calls progress, nothing more than a business plan for the entire world. There have been many Spartas down through the ages, with ever-increasing mass slaughter of people as this dark thing gets closer and closer to its goal. Not one generation has been allowed freedom from war for the last few hundred years, especially in Europe. And he's got here a photograph from an old book. It's a medieval portrait of mercenary troops with their booty of animals and slaves. And he said the system has been here from the beginning of civilization. Civilization defined as, quote, a relatively high level of culture and technological development. They give us our culture. They refer to us in the biodiversity treaty as an organism, folks, literally, and that we are no different than the lowest amoeba. And what do they do with organisms in petri dishes? They culture them. The world is their petri dish, and we are the organisms that have been cultured. And they have given us our culture. Whenever the culture, quote, changes, they are the ones that are behind making the changes. They are the ones behind the styles, the fashions, the fads. What we watch on television, what we read, what we talk about. They have been doing this since time immemorial. Doesn't mean they're going to make it. They haven't yet, and they've been trying it for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And we have to keep that in mind. We'll be back tomorrow night, and maybe Alan will come on with us. And we'll see what that brings up. Thank you for being here tonight. Thank you for listening. And remember, this broadcast is brought to you by you, our listeners. You want it to keep going? You have to be part of it. We'll see you tomorrow night, folks. Good night, and God bless you. Creator, bless you.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to